SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
For one of the final times this National Football League season, welcome to a Football Friday, live right here on the morning after on Sports Grid. Sirius XM, channel 159, that is the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM, all across the Sports Grid network as well. I am Ben Stevens. A Football Friday on Conference Championship Week, ahead of Conference Championship Sunday in the National Football League. Four teams remaining, all looking for a spot in Super Bowl 57 in Phoenix/Glendale, Arizona, in the chase for that Lombardi Trophy as the champions this year in the NFL. We will break down everything you need to know, every single angle, every single number, all the key matchups associated for the NFC Championship game on Sunday afternoon in Philadelphia, followed by the nightcap inside Arrowhead in Kansas City as the Chiefs host the Bengals, where the market has moved, what the numbers say right now, and what it all means for the outcomes of these conference championship matchups. We'll touch in on the NBA as well. It's rivalry week in the association and titles all around. The Australian Open finals are set as well, in the first Grand Slam event of the year in the calendar year this year in tennis. All right, then there were four teams remaining in this National Football League season. The two out of the NFC, the top two seeds in that conference. The Philadelphia Eagles host the San Francisco 49ers. In the AFC for a second consecutive year, a rematch in the title game in Arrowhead between the Bengals and the Chiefs. This is that big picture perspective as we enter conference championship weekend with the four teams and their prices to win Super Bowl 57. The Eagles right now still remain the favorites on the FanDuel Sportsbook, plus 230, only 30 cents behind the Kansas City Chiefs, a plus 260 number. The Chiefs back to that second best price at this moment because of the line we have seen flip once again in favor now of Kansas City. Yesterday, the Bengals were plus 280. Now it's the Chiefs at plus 260. Flip those two numbers from where they stood yesterday. San Francisco rounds out the four remaining teams at plus 320. But as you can see there, all four of these teams within just 90 cents of one another. It is the expectation that Conference Title Sunday this year in the National Football League is going to be as competitive as we have seen in quite some time. It starts on a Sunday afternoon in the city of brotherly love between the Philadelphia Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers. Philly right now, and where they have remained really all week long, a 2.5-point home favorite against San Francisco. The over-under ticked up earlier this week. It remains now at 46.5. Every game that Jalen Hurts has started this year, the Birds have been booked as a favorite. They are 9-7 against the spread. San Francisco has long been the hottest team in the National Football League, riding a 12-game win streak into this NFC title game, their third trip to the NFC Championship in the last 4 years. The last time San Francisco was booked as an underdog, week 8 against the LA Rams, they won that football game outright by 3 scores. It was the start of this 12-game win streak for a second straight year inside Arrowhead Stadium, where the Chiefs host an AFC Championship game for the 5th consecutive season. It's the Bengals and the Chiefs, a rematch of last year when the Bengals outscored Kansas City 14-3 in the second half, forcing overtime and an Evan McPherson walk-off field goal gave Cincinnati the AFC Championship and a berth in Super Bowl 56. Quickly, we welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience here, the opening hour of one of the final Football Fridays of this year in the National Football League. Sirius XM, channel 159. All of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the fold as well. I am Ben Stevens, and that is where the line has flipped. Is the right side correctly favored for the AFC Championship game? We will find out come Sunday. But currently, the Chiefs back to the home favorite. They lay a 1.5, minus 118 on the money line. It flipped past zero once again for the second time this week. Yesterday, the line now works in KC's favor, all at 1.5. It all has been around the right ankle of Patrick Mahomes. That high ankle sprain has been what has dictated this line at this moment. The Chiefs a favorite in all but two games this year. The Bengals have been booked as an underdog in all three of their previous matchups against the Kansas City Chiefs, and they've won all three of those outright. Patrick Mahomes at practice yesterday, walking around, looking pretty good from what reporters have seen, but even Mahomes saying, hey, let's not buy into this too much. I'm just at practice right now, a full participant for a second straight day. So four teams still in the hunt for a Super Bowl championship, but the 28 other NFL organizations already on to the offseason. And with the five have had coaching vacancies this year in the offseason, the first filled yesterday, the Carolina Panthers, tabbing Frank Reich as their new head coach. Frank Reich, of course, fired earlier this season from Indianapolis, where he spent 5 years, four plus seasons, with a 40-33-1 straight up record. In fact, Frank Reich was the first starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers franchise back in 1995. The Panthers were incredibly competitive this year, despite firing their head coach, Matt Rhule, following week number five. Steve Wilks, who is the interim head man in Carolina, passed over for this job, and maybe he has a bone to chew, kept this Carolina Panthers team incredibly competitive. Booked as an underdog in 11 of the 12 games that Wilks was the interim head coach for, Carolina won six of those outright, contending for that divisional crown in the NFC South until week number 17. Quickly here, Dan Quinn was thought to be one of the biggest head coaching names in this cycle. He is going to stay in Dallas as the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys next year as well. More of this Football Friday up next on the Morning After.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Conference Championship Sunday is on the horizon. We break it all down live right here on a Football Friday on the Morning After on Sports Grid. I am Ben Stevens. On Conference Title Sunday, you can find Mike Blewett and his co-host Kevin Walsh live on Pro Football Today starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Time with everything, and I mean everything, you need to know for Conference Championship Sunday. Blewett joins us here on a Football Friday on the Morning After as well, where Blewett will start with our breakdown of the NFC title game in Philadelphia in this segment, and then in our following segment, the preview of the rematch in the AFC Championship game between the Chiefs and the Bengals. Blewett, for all of it, we appreciate your time here on this Football Friday as always.
Can't wait to get into it. Obviously, big matchups. I don't think you could ask for two better games of the teams that we watched for the last 3 months. Cincinnati and Kansas City have been the two best teams in the AFC, and the same can be said for the NFC teams.
San Francisco has won 12 straight games. Cincinnati has won 10 straight games. Two of the hottest teams in the National Football League at this point on conference championship weekend for sure. We start Blewett in the NFC. As we look at what will happen on Sunday afternoon in Philadelphia at the Link, it's the Eagles and the Niners. Philadelphia, a 2.5-point favorite right now over San Francisco with the over-under standing at 46.5. Blewett, all four of these teams within 90 cents of one another to win a Super Bowl. Both of the spreads this weekend under a field goal. This, the larger of the two, though, at 2.5 points in favor of the Birds. Just how competitive, Mike Blewett, do you expect the NFC title game to be?
I think both games are going to be very competitive. I don't think any outcome will surprise me other than perhaps a blowout in either of the games. Even a comfortable win would probably surprise me. But the Eagles come into this game 15-1 when Jalen Hurts is starting. 8-1 at home when Jalen Hurts is starting. I think based on what we've seen, what we saw last week against the Giants, I think it's fair to say that they don't have any limitations on him. He really had effectively another week to heal because that game was over so early. They got to pull starters at some point during the game. So I feel good about the Eagles in this spot. I've been a Niners backer all year. I think it's incredible what they've done. And their defense is absolutely a difference maker that can shut down or limit any offense. I just think on the other side, when we've seen Purdy's play these last two games, as you and I talked, coming in to the coming out of the break. He hasn't been bad. Purdy's been really good over the course of the winning streak. He hasn't been bad in the playoffs, but I don't know that he's been at that extra level, which requires you to be at that level to go on the road and win a championship game. I think he's been okay. The numbers in the wild card round, I don't think told the entire story of the shaky start and him being a little shaky throughout points of the game. 330 yards and the touchdowns, but it was more due to explosive plays than it was Purdy being really sharp.
18 of 30 completions and attempts in that football game against Seattle. Really indicative, blew it in the 70-plus yard touchdown grab for Debo Samuel when the ball traveled about 5 yards in the air, and then Debo Samuel, the dynamic playmaker that he is, did the rest. Exactly. So, Blue, when you look at the numbers, though, for Brock Purdy, each and every start this year has been the most significant of his young NFL career. This is his first postseason road start. What do you think Kyle Shanahan will ask of his young rookie quarterback on Sunday in Philly?
Yeah, good question. I thought I had a very specific opinion on what I thought Dallas would try to do and what the Niners would try to do. And Dallas was successful. The Niners did come out trying to run the ball and bailed on it pretty early. Didn't bail on it throughout the game, obviously, right? We saw them have a successful running game in the third and fourth quarter. They helped them to ice the game. They picked up big first downs. But Dallas did a great job overall limiting San Francisco on the run. And again, we go back to what Kyle Shanahan wants to do. They want to create explosive running plays. And it's at the very least, explosive short passing games, like you just mentioned, the Debo Samuel type play. So it's an extremely difficult offense to defend. Obviously, we've seen three quarterbacks run it with varying success for this team, and the Mr. Irrelevant is taking them to the NFC Championship game. But I think that that's where the Eagles are going to have to be really effective. They're on pace to have the most sacks in the history of the NFL in a given season. I think they're certainly going to try to create pressure and can do so against this Niners offensive line. But the key is really going to be stopping the run and making sure that those defensive linemen up front limit McCaffrey and Mitchell. And there's an added component to it where those guys aren't 100% healthy. You can make the argument that not everybody is 100% healthy at this time of the year, but McCaffrey and Mitchell sitting out practice is not ideal.
Both San Francisco and Philadelphia, some of the best defenses you will find around the National Football League. The Niners ranked first in scoring defense, total defense, and rushing defense, where they might be more susceptible through the air. The 19th best out of 32 NFL teams in terms of pass defense. The Eagles are the best pass defense in the National Football League, the second best total defense, a top 10 scoring unit as well, but 18th when it comes to defending the run. You saw those numbers for Christian McCaffrey and Debo Samuel. When you have two guys that have a combo prop north of 70, Christian McCaffrey close to 90, it shows how dynamic this offensive scheme can be, and that Brock Purdy doesn't need to throw for 350 yards and have it all come from his right arm. He has the tools in place to still have success against a really good Eagles defense. Blewett, on the other side, it's Jalen Hurts in this NFC Championship game for the Philadelphia Eagles. Do you believe he is the individual player in this matchup that will have the most impact on the result of the game?
No question. It's not even a question in my mind. If Jalen Hurts is as good as he's been throughout the year, they obviously win that game. How can the Niners slow this down? Obviously, the Giants were not up for the task. They got run over for nearly 270 yards. And that isn't going to happen to the Niners. The Niners' strength is clearly their front seven. They're going to have to make sure that they don't give up explosive plays like they did against Seattle. And obviously, they're able to limit it against Dallas. But I think getting pressure on Hurts is, look, the NFL can be complex in a lot of ways. But the one thing that's not complex is when you put pressure on the quarterback, the offense gets a lot less effective. That's the bottom line. And Jalen Hurts obviously has the ability to run, But these linebackers are the three linebackers, the best linebacking core in the league that can actually contain him when he starts to run. So Sirianni and Shanahan going against one another, Sirianni's going to have to be creative if the offensive line doesn't hold up. We know about Lane Johnson's injury, but this offensive line is really one of the best, if not the best, in the entire league. It's why the Eagles are as successful as they are. Offensive and defensive lines have been fantastic.
All five on the offensive line for Philadelphia, either a Pro Bowl player or a Pro Bowl reserve. That is how good they have been as a unit this year. 46.5 blue is that rushing yards prop for Jalen Hurts. It's 50.5 for Miles Sanders, 11.5 for the man known as Kenneth Gainwell. They don't call him Gain Bad for a reason. He had a buck 12 last week against the Giants. Blew it. As a team, the Eagles ran the football 44 times for 268 yards against the Giants. However, the Niners are the best rushing defense in the National Football League. What do you think the plan of attack is offensively for Philadelphia against San Francisco's defense?
If they got half that number against the Niners, they can win this football game. That would be a big number to put up. 134, 135 would be a huge number against the Niners. I think the short passing game, getting the ball into the hands of Brown and Smith, is going to be vitally important for them to pick up first downs.
A really good breakdown, and it continues from the NFC to the AFC Championship game up next on this Football Friday on TMA.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Conference Championship Sunday begins in Philadelphia. We just broke down the NFC title game between the top two seeds in that conference. The number one seed, the Philadelphia Eagles, hosting that two seed in the San Francisco 49ers. It's the top overall seed in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs, taking on that number three seed, the Cincinnati Bengals. For the second straight year, Mike Blewett, inside Arrowhead Stadium, it's Cincy and KC. In fact, Arrowhead has been the site of the AFC Championship game for five straight years. That's what we take into this conference championship rematch Sunday night in Kansas City, Missouri. The Chiefs now a 1.5 point favorite. The over-under up slightly as well. Now an even number of 48 points. Blew it for the second time this week. Yesterday, we saw the line flip. Cincinnati was the favorite. Then it became Kansas City once again. Blewett, do you think all of this line movement is strictly focused on the right ankle of Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, I think there's a good deal of it that has to do with that. I don't think the sports books are going to arbitrarily move lines up and down based on a news report. Oh, he looked good in practice and he was walking fine and he was mobile. I don't think that's what this is about. I think there is, when it comes to games like this, where there's an extreme amount of volume betting happening, and by the way, the bets will start to pour in starting today and through the weekend, I don't know how much line movement we'll see because the respected money has already put down positions on this line, right? I'm of the opinion that there's no possible way that you could have a high ankle sprain on a Sunday and be fine by the next Sunday. You can shoot it up, you can do whatever you want, but there's no way he won't be limited. And especially if he gets tackled to the ground and there's some sort of significant tweaking of the ankle, he's going to be limited. That aside, it's absolutely reasonable to say that Cincinnati's been better than the Chiefs for the last 3 months. You just mentioned the winning streak. This isn't really just about Mahomes' ankle. If Mahomes was straight up 100%, people would still be picking Cincinnati. Now, the line might be a little bit different. It might be 2.5. It might be 3 even for Kansas City, just getting the field goal at home. But Cincinnati has been in the discussion for a couple of months now as one of the best teams in the entire league. It's why we opened by saying these are really the four best teams in the league. We don't always get that, and we have it now. And I think Cincinnati is playing with a ton of confidence, especially after throttling the Bills.
So as we look at Patrick Mahomes then, Mike Blewett, in the right high ankle sprain, how effective do you expect Patrick to be on Sunday night against this Bengals defense? And as you compare him, of course, to Joe Burrow on the other side, who ultimately has the bigger night that could propel their team to a berth in Super Bowl 57?
Well, despite the fact that I have money on the Chiefs to win, to get to the Super Bowl, I am of the opinion that Joe Burrow is going to have the bigger night simply because I think they're going to win. I think the stats for Mahomes could get to the point where he's got more passing yards. I just think the Bengals offense will be a little bit more effective against this Bengals. The Bengals offense will be a little bit more effective against the Chiefs defense than the other way around. Mahomes, for all of his brilliance and his mobility, he's the best pocket passer in the league, at least near the top of the best pocket passers in the league. So he doesn't have to be mobile in order for him to be very effective. But I just think that the way Lou Anarumo has really engineered this defense, particularly in the second halves of games, the Chiefs are going to have to get off to a good start like they did last year. And the end of the game for the Chiefs in the championship game last year was really bad. Fourth quarter and overtime were really bad for them. There's a world where that could happen again because the Bengals are so good in the second halves, but you have to trust the Chiefs to get off to a good start this weekend. And with that injury, I wonder how good that start can be.
Right. It's, you want Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs to come hot out of the gates, but how exactly hot can he be as he is testing that ankle to see in live game action how that feels? And Blewett, he said that yesterday at his press conference where he walked up there and all the reporters were staring at that right ankle. And he's like, guys, settle down. You're not going to be able to tell all that much from how I stand at a podium or the 10 minutes of practice that you saw where I'm doing calisthenics. You're not going to be able to get all that much. And whatever he looks like in practice, a full participant all of this week, it'll be a very different feel come Sunday night in a chilly Kansas City inside Arrowhead Stadium with an AFC championship on the line. Blewett, it's been well documented by now here on this show and pretty much everywhere you have listened to a preview of this game that Joe Burrow and the Bengals over the last year have owned the Kansas City Chiefs, a perfect 3-0 against KC, including the 2021 AFC title game. We showed that earlier. Kansas City had an 11-point lead at the halftime break. The Chiefs were up 21-10. The Bengals outscored them by 11 points in the second half, forcing overtime and Evan McPherson field goal. Cincinnati advances out of the AFC championship game into Super Bowl 56. In fact, in all three of the meetings over this past year, the Chiefs have had at least a touchdown lead at some point in the game, and Cincinnati has shown that resolve they are known for and have come back to take it away from KC. Do you think Sunday's AFC championship game resembles a similar script?
Yeah, I think you could potentially expect that, but good news for Bengals fans, they came out gangbusters against the Bills the other day. It was 14-0 before you could get your first drink. So what I watched the game yesterday, the AFC Championship game from last year, I was watching it yesterday just to sort of remember these details. It's obviously being compared a lot. And this thing was 21-3. 21-10 at the end of the first half happened because Samaje Perine broke a 50-yard play to score. The Chiefs came back down the field with a minute left, and instead of opting for a field goal at the end of the first half, on the last play of the first half, they threw a screen to Tyreek Hill, and he was tackled inbounds end of half. So they passed on what ended up being a crucial field goal, and I wonder if Andy Reid thinks twice about that over the weekend to see if, you know what, I'm just going to take these points. The Bengals very often take points. I tweeted out something yesterday about Evan McPherson's success. It's been really incredible. Playoff games against the Chiefs, everything else. Against the Chiefs in these three games that they've won, he's 8 of 8 on field goals. In his playoff career history, he's 17 of 17 on field goals. In 6 of his last 9 games, so far this season, including the playoffs, he's hit at least 2 field goals. Zach Taylor is not afraid to roll Evan McPherson out there and take points. I think that it often gets a bad rap, but a part of the Bengals' success last year where they nearly won the Super Bowl was that their kicker was insanely hot. Insanely hot. He hit everything. Three games with four field goals. So I think it's important to note that, because in what we think could be a tight game, the spread says so, every time they play it's a tight game. Both great kickers here, but who's willing to take the points early? I think the Bengals are just going to try to rack up points whenever they can. And their good start against Buffalo, I thought, was a very good sign for them moving ahead.
And that good start was a touchdown pass from Joe Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase. It's not just the quarterback comparison. It's a comparison of the top targets for both teams. Ja'Marr Chase, a touchdown last week in Western New York. Travis Kelce was targeted 17 times and had 14 grabs for 98 yards and two scores in the divisional round win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. Blewett, as you compare these two, Chase versus Kelce comes Sunday night in Arrowhead. Who do you think has more of an impact on the outcome of the AFC title game?
It's a good question, because you wonder, we have seen games before where Kelce has had big numbers, but the Chiefs weren't able to pull it off. I think Ja'Marr Chase has a big game that's indicative of the Cincinnati Bengals winning the game. I don't think there's a scenario where Ja'Marr Chase goes off and they lose. I think there is a scenario where Kelce can rack up numbers at least similar to what he did last week and they lose by a field goal. I think that's possible, because we haven't seen any consistency from the outside wide receivers in Kansas City. What's going to be really important for Kansas City is, can they stave off this Bengals pass rush and have Isaiah Pacheco churning up yards? Can he be as effective? And I'm not saying Isaiah Pacheco is the key to the offense, but I think that is a data point that would have you thinking, you know what? Kansas City was able to run the ball in addition to Mahomes' effective passing, and they were able to win the game.
It will be really interesting to see how much of an impact, how much of a focus the ground game is for both teams. The Bengals last week against the Bills ran it 34 times for 172 yards, where Blewett, the narrative was, this banged up Bengals offensive line is going to have trouble keeping Joe Burrow upright. They took the fight to the Bills up front and ran it for a north of 170 yards. All right, quickly here, Mike Blewett, as we forecast past Conference Championship Sunday to Super Bowl Sunday, what do you think the outlook is for these four teams in a potential showdown in Phoenix for Super Bowl 57?
Again, nothing would surprise me. I think a Kansas City-San Francisco rematch would be pretty cool, but I'm in the camp that I think the Eagles are going to take it at home, and that Cincinnati's going to go on the road and beat the Chiefs amazingly for the fourth consecutive time. So I've got an Eagles-Bengals Super Bowl.
It is tied for the largest look-ahead line, the early predictions for Super Bowl 57. The Eagles, a 1.5-point favorite, minus 118 on the money line, in a potential showdown against the Bengals in Super Bowl 57. Mike Blewett, thank you so much. Conference Championship Sunday starts at 10 a.m. Eastern time with Pro Football Today, live right here on Sports Grid. More of the morning after, up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A slight break from Football Friday, live right here on the morning after on Sports Grid, ahead of Conference Championship Weekend in the National Football League, because it's a big week as well in the NBA. Welcome back to a Friday live right here on the morning after on Sports Grid. I am Ben Stevens. Evan Sideri joins the show now as well from BasketballNews.com. One of the best breaking down the association each and every week, live right here on the morning after. Evan, as always, we appreciate your time and your insight here on this Friday morning.
Absolutely, Ben. Thanks again.
And although it is a break from Football Friday, Evan Sideri will be in Kansas City, Missouri, come Sunday night for that matchup in the AFC title game between the Chiefs and the Bengals. All right, focusing on the NBA right now. Evan, a big week because it is rivalry week for the first time ever in the history of the association. And last night, the All-Star starters named as well for the 2023 All-Star Game in Salt Lake City in just about a month. We have the starters out. In the East, the captain, once again is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Jason Tatum joins him, as does Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and Donovan Mitchell making the return to Salt Lake as a starter for the Eastern Conference. Out west, LeBron James, the captain once again, Stephen Curry in the lineup, as is Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, and Zion Williamson. Evan, as you evaluate these two teams, and by the way, the captains will select the rest of their team out of the all-star players right before tip, come that all-star game in Salt Lake in just under a month. Evan, as you look at the starters and you look at the format moving forward for the all-star game, was there anybody snubbed, not named an all-star starter in the East or the West yesterday?
I've seen a lot of particular gripe coming out of Philadelphia about this for Joel Embiid. I think there's a good reason for that, because he's been on an absolute tear the last couple of years, and especially the way he's playing right now, putting up over 35 points per game the last 6 weeks of the season. He's been on a tear enough with Nikola Jokic, where there's some legit buzz around Joel Embiid to be an MVP candidate. So I think it's kind of a shame that Embiid is not a starter in this situation. I think looking at Kevin Durant and Zion Williamson, you can't blame the guy for getting hurt, but I do think it is a little, as far as Embiid goes, I think he should get the slot over Kevin Durant as a starter simply because of his injuries. But Zion Williamson, he was great when he was in there on the west side of things, so not really much complaints on there. But from all the Sixers fans that reached out and saying, hey, why is Embiid not a starter? I think that's a legitimate gripe there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the Sixers right now, the hottest team in the NBA, because you can see the optimism for Philadelphia with the second best record in the Eastern Conference. They've won six straight. When Joel Embiid are there, and Tyrese Maxey's there, and James Harden is there, and they're all playing at the high level they are, Philadelphia is certainly a contender in the Eastern Conference. It is rivalry week, and one of the longest standing rivalries in the NBA took place last night inside TD Garden. The Boston Celtics hosting the New York Knicks. A fantastic game that goes to overtime. Jaylen Brown misses two free throws late that would have given the Celtics the lead, or at least tied it if he made half of his two free throws. And the Knicks prevail on the road, 120-117 in overtime, winning outright as an 8.5-point underdog. Jaylen Brown missed those free throws late in overtime, Evan, but it was the Celtics that rallied late in the fourth quarter, ending regulation on a 16-4 run to force that extra session. But as the Knicks get the 3-point victory on the road last night in Boston, what was your main takeaway, Evan?
I think for me, it was a bad loss for Boston, just because the way they started out that game, they started off super hot from the field. Jason Tatum, I believe, had 12 points in the first 5 minutes of that game on 4-for-4 shooting. And then from there, they kind of went away from Tatum a little bit. Jaylen Brown kind of got his shots up there. Derek White, Malcolm Brogdon, they all struggled efficiency-wise from the field. And on the other side of the court, New York was fantastic offensively. Julius Randle had a great game. Jalen Brunson, RJ Barrett. All those guys stood up for New York in a way that they weren't able to stop it from Boston's side. And Boston's one of the best defensive units in the association. For the Knicks to do that last night, that was really impressive and probably their best win of the season, to be honest, Ben. So I think it's a huge momentum swing for New York. Yeah. Boston's still one of the best teams in the NBA here. But I learned a lot more about the Knicks last night than I did the Celtics, to be honest.
The Knicks have won two straight games, both of them outright as an underdog against the Cavs and now the Celtics on the road in Boston. A huge night once again for Julius Randle. 37 points, 5 of 13 from deep. He has been on an absolute tear here in the last 10 games or so for the New York Knicks. Evan, when Julius Randle is playing at this productive clip, what does it mean for the Knicks long term?
I think long term, they're in the same spot, I would say. I think their ceiling, in my opinion, is around a 4 or 5 seed in the Eastern Conference tops. And maybe you get out of the first round and then you have a good second round series against the Philadelphia or someone else and you eventually lose that one. That's not the current cap for this Knicks team, and why, looking back on it now, long term, that trade for Donovan Mitchell they weren't able to do last year, that's a move that would have vaulted them way up. If you have Julius Randle playing like this next to Donovan Mitchell, that's a whole different team in New York there. And you add in Jalen Brunson there as well. But this current iteration of the Knicks, they're in a spot where I could see them being a 4 to 6 seed for the next couple of years. But they need to upgrade that Randle spot eventually, get a legitimate star next to RJ Barrett, next to Jalen Brunson. I think they'll be in a good spot in a couple of years.
110-1 right now for the Knickerbockers to win the Eastern Conference, the sixth longest price, as you see there. The seventh best record for New York, though, 4 games above .500. In rivalry week, the Celtics go down. The Boston Celtics now, Evan, have lost 3 straight games. Is there any concern at the top of the Eastern Conference at this moment?
I would say no, not currently. We've seen Boston go through these stretches before. Last year, they were one of the most inconsistent teams in the NBA. And then we see around late February, early March, they really lock in and they have a three-month-long run all the way to the NBA Finals. So I'm not worried just yet about Boston. I could see them making a move at the deadline to help get some more bench help in there, maybe on the buyout market too. But as far as that goes, Jason Tatum's one of the best players in the NBA. Jalen Brown's a great sidekick. Malcolm Brogdon's been a great addition to that team as well. Marcus Smart's also been out of the lineup too for the last couple of games. So that's a big reason why Boston's been the loss column too. So get them healthy, maybe get a couple additions here on the margins, and they should be just fine in the postseason.
Evan, quickly here, you mentioned how Philadelphia fans maybe have a reason to be a little bit irked that Joel Embiid was not named an all-star starter. Like we mentioned, six straight wins now for the Sixers, which has propelled them to the second-best mark in the Eastern Conference. When Philly is playing like this, how true of a contender are they out East?
I think, actually, to be honest, Ben, I would put them right next to Boston, next to Milwaukee. When Embiid and Harden are playing like this, when Tyrese Maxey's playing like this, D'Anthony Melton's been a great underrated player for Philadelphia as well in the backcourt. I think they're a legitimate top 2-3 team. And you have Joel Embiid and James Harden playing at this level and these young players coming along too. I think they go toe-to-toe with the likes of Giannis, the likes of Jason Tatum and the Celtics in the playoffs and hold their own just fine. So honestly, I'd put them right up in that same tier, Ben.
A team that was in the thick of the Eastern Conference race last year, at least through the regular season, the Chicago Bulls. It's been anything but, though, this year for Chicago. Last night on the road in Charlotte, it was maybe billed as a rivalry because LaMelo Ball plays for the Hornets and Lonzo Ball, excuse me, hasn't played in so long I forgot his name, plays for the Chicago Bulls, but both injured, not in this game. And the Hornets went outright at home as a three-point underdog by 15. We can highlight what Charlotte did for sure. Terry Rozier, 28 points for the Hornets last night. But on the other side of this equation, Evan, how disappointing has this season been for Chicago?
Easily one of the most disappointing teams in the NBA. And it's been coming for a while now. We saw this stretch last year when Lonzo Ball got hurt. We saw multiple bench pieces go out of the lineup, and they really struggled from there. And I think we're seeing the same thing now with this Bulls team. With DeMar DeRozan is a great player. But I think the time is now to sell off on these guys like DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine on a huge contract. I think these players can get you good value at the trade deadline. Nikola Vucevic as well. This Bulls team at 22-26, we know what they are over halfway through the season. They're a disappointing team that's going to be maybe in the play-in. And that's not worth it with all these salaries on your roster. So I keep an eye on the Bulls here, Ben, and the trade deadline in the next couple weeks to see what they do because DeRozan, LaVine, Vucevic, it's not a core. It's not going to win you much in the postseason. It sure seems that way.
Chicago now four games below 500. To echo Evan's point, all five starters for the Bulls scored in double figures, and they still lost by 15 points last night as a three-point road favorite. At this point last year, through 48 games, Chicago was 30-18, a very different script here in 2022-23. The Dallas Mavericks, Evan, desperately needed a win last night on the road, and we thought, hey, Luka Doncic is going to propel them in this rivalry against the Phoenix Suns because the Mavs knocked out the Suns of the postseason just a year ago, but it wasn't Luka. Only 3 minutes played last night after getting the start, tweaked his left ankle once again. He missed the rest of this basketball game. Despite that, Spencer Dinwiddie scores 36 points, and the Mavs win outright on the road as the short underdog last night against the Phoenix Suns. So a two-part question here, Evan. What does it say about everybody else on Dallas stepping up for Luka Doncic, and then also, are you concerned about the health of Luka moving forward?
Yeah, I'll start off with the second one with Luka. Hopefully, it's not a long-term thing with him, but these ankle problems have been persistent lately for him, so it is a little worrisome. But to be honest, yeah. I'm not worried with Luka just because he's such a great player. He can score 40, 30 points, put up 50 points as far as points, rebounds, assists, really any night he wants to, which says an awful lot about how great of a player he is, how transcendent of a talent he is. But this Mavericks team, Ben, trend-wise with the Phoenix Suns, they own them. They simply own them. It's been like this since the last postseason with Luka, and he kind of just ripped their hearts out. But to have Spencer Dinwiddie go in there, beat up on the Suns, and put up a season high for him, 36 points, and have the Mavericks win outright when Luka doesn't play, even without Devin Booker playing in the lineup, it's an awful, awful loss for the Suns. They're like the Bulls to me, one of the most disappointing teams in the NBA. Hopefully Devin Booker comes back and gets them on track here, but that ship's starting to sink a little bit as far as long-term stock in the Suns.
Chris Paul was out there last night, as was DeAndre Ayton. The Suns were on a four-game win streak after they had dropped 12 of their 15 games prior to that. Now another loss last night at home. Rivalry week, and it seems like in the Western Conference. The Memphis Grizzlies have a ton of rivals, maybe even including the Timberwolves tonight in the Twin Cities. Currently, the Grizz, a 3-point favorite on the road in Minneapolis. Evan, the reason I build this as rivalry week for the Western Conference is because the Grizz have said, and John Morant has said, we don't fear anybody on our side of things yet. Just 15-14 straight up this year against Western Conference opponents. How important is it, Evan, for these Grizzlies to stack up wins against the teams they might see come playoff time in the West?
It's huge, and especially without no Steven Adams for the next couple weeks, a huge injury for Memphis, underrated player as far as rebounds, setting screens for John Morant to get him open. It's going to be a treacherous stretch there without Steven Adams to see how they respond there, but as far as tonight's game goes, I actually do like Memphis. It's a great game tonight between John and Anthony Edwards is really showing out for Minnesota lately. I think Morant has a big game for Memphis. I think we see a close win for Memphis in this spot against Minnesota, but to be honest, this Grizzlies team, they provided that bulletin board material when John Morant said that. So every single team in the Western Conference could get their best effort every single night against these Grizzlies after those comments from John Morant. But as far as Grizzlies, Wolves tonight go, I love Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, Jaw said it, and we always continue to make sure we echo that point. It's time for the Grizzlies to step up where they need to in the Western Conference. Anthony Edwards, who has been sensational, 44, 31, and 37 in his last three games. He has looked really, really good out there. 37 in the win against the Pelicans earlier this week. Now, a rematch of sorts from an NBA championship nearly half a decade ago when the Toronto Raptors pulled off the unthinkable and beat the Golden State Warriors. The Dubs at home tonight. Evan, a Golden State team, only about 30 seconds left in this segment. That's an even 500 at the moment. How important is this next stretch until the All-Star break for Golden State?
It's massive. You got to get on the right momentum track here, get Stephen Curry back in the lineup, have Klay Thompson get going offensively too. I think it's a huge stretch for Golden State. I think tonight's a huge spot for them. I think they went outright and covered the spread against Toronto.
A 5-point favorite at home against the Raptors. Evan Sideri, safe travels to Kansas City. Get some Jack Stack, some burnt ends, enjoy the barbecue, and enjoy the AFC Championship game between the Bengals and Chiefs as well. We round out this opening hour of the Morning After up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to a Football Friday, live right here on the Morning After on SportsGrid. It's almost bittersweet to say the two words Football Friday, because there's only three football games left in this NFL season. Conference Championship Sunday on the horizon, the NFC title game in Philadelphia between the Eagles and the 49ers, the AFC title game, a rematch from last year between the Chiefs and the Bengals. Four teams all in the hunt for a spot in Super Bowl 57. And when we look at Conference Championship Sunday, live right here on this Football Friday on the Morning After, the games are going to be competitive. The largest spread is 2.5 in favor of the Eagles. Both spreads under a field goal. All four teams and their Super Bowl odds right now within 90 cents of one another. So with how competitive this weekend is expected to be, we're just looking at the money line. We're looking at outright winners. So who do you have the most confidence in entering Conference Championship weekend? That was the question in Fade the Public. At SportsGrid TV on Twitter, which team do you have the most confidence in getting the win on Sunday? Maybe not covering a number, but just getting the win. The Eagles have the largest money line in their favor. It's minus 148. It's a little bit juicy, but it's still under $1.50. So out of the 49ers, the Eagles in the NFC Championship game, the Bengals and the Chiefs in the AFC title game, who do you believe in the most entering conference title Sunday? The Eagles, who are favored by the most points at 2.5, get the most love from the public here, about 41% of our Fade the Public poll. What is notable, I would say, is the fact that Chiefs have the least amount of votes, just a little bit above 12%. Interesting, because Kansas City has now flipped to the favorite once again, for that AFC Championship matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals inside Arrowhead. All of that, perhaps, maybe the lack of confidence is the lack of belief in how effective Patrick Mahomes can be with the right high ankle sprain. Plenty more to come on this Football Friday. Hour number two of the morning after is up next, following a Sports Grid news update from Alex Fasano.